your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Our chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to be playing a series of clips tonight, and they're going to be describing different angles and different aspects of all the ensuing, scandals that are ongoing in Washington, D.C. So the first one is Senator Grassley on the floor of the Senate.
As they say, earlier this year, Ranking Member Feinstein expressed concerns about reports that former Attorney General Lynch asked Director Comey to downplay the FBI's investigations as merely a matter, instead of using the term investigation during the campaign. Yet since then, the ranking member has told me plainly she won't join any oversight of the FBI's Clinton email investigations. Even on Trump-Russia oversight, where we have been able to cooperate a great deal, there have been similar problems. First, all year, I have wanted to learn more about the origins of the dossier that largely kickstarted FBI's investigation of the Trump campaign. In July, the ranking member joined me in a bipartisan letter seeking voluntary cooperation from the firm that produced the dossier. The dossier was based largely on Russian sources within Russia and was put together by a former British spy. It made salacious and unverified claims about Trump. The company responsible for producing it, Fusion GPS, was uncooperative. In response to our bipartisan request, it dumped on the committee about 32,000 pages of press clippings and 8,000 pages that were entirely blank. Since then, it has provided zero additional documents. The founder of Fusion GPS initially indicated he would rely on his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination rather than testify at the committee hearing in July. He later agreed to a private staff interview, but refused to answer dozens of key questions. I would like to compel him to answer questions and compel him to provide the documents that Senator Feinstein and I both asked him in July to provide voluntarily. But under our committee rules, I don't have the authority to do that on my own. Now, why would Democrats not want to follow up and get the documents from Fusion GPS that we already asked for together? In other words, in a bipartisan way. Do they not want to know more about how this company put together its anti-Trump dossier from Russian government sources? Well, in light of recent news, the resistance from Democrats to this line of Trump-Russia inquiry is now a little more understandable. It turns out the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee are the ones who paid Fusion GPS for the information it gathered from Russian government sources. I don't know whether the ranking member or her staff knew the facts earlier this year when I was trying to persuade her to do bipartisan follow-up work with Fusion GPS, but I do know that unless both sides are willing to ask tough questions, no matter where the facts lead, there can be no bipartisan oversight. So we have learned that the Democratic National Committee paid for an anti-Trump dossier based on information from Russian government sources. Second, we have learned that the Inspector General uncovered evidence of partisan bias by a senior FBI official at the center of both Clinton and the Trump-Russia investigations, which led to his dismissal from the Mueller team before that news broke. Back in October this year, I wrote to the FBI official requesting voluntary cooperation and private transcribed interviews with the committee. The ranking member did not sign that letter. The committee has received no letter in reply. We're still waiting for documents from the FBI about his and other officials' participation in the draft Comey statement. The FBI should comply voluntarily, but if they don't, I would issue a subpoena to require that the documents be provided and that the witness sit for a deposition. However, under our committee rules, I don't have the authority to do that without support from the ranking member. Finally, I have long had concerns that the scope of the FBI Clinton investigation was artificially narrowed. Recent revelations about these text messages showing political bias only heighten these concerns. In recent federal court rulings, the FBI said that the scope of the investigation was limited in two ways. First, it was limited to two issues dealing only with the handling of classified information. Second, the scope of the FBI review was limited to the time when former Secretary Clinton was at the State Department. But what if there was evidence of crime not related to the mishandling of classified information? What if the facts showed some obstruction, such as intentional destruction of documents after she was Secretary of State? Why exclude those topics from the scope of the inquiry? Who made those decisions? Why were those decisions made? Was there any political bias in those decisions? Certain areas shouldn't be declared off limits beforehand in an investigation. And an investigation should go common sense, where the facts take it. In multiple letters to the FBI last year, I raised concerns about the scope of the FBI investigation. I asked Director Comey back May 2016 whether the Justice Department had improperly narrowed the scope of the investigation to look at mishandling of classified information and ignore other important legal issues. So I want to quote from that letter. If federal records on the private server were hidden or destroyed, then there may have been a violation of 18 U.S.C. paragraph 2071, which prohibits concealing or destroying such federal records. If any of the deleted emails were responsive to congressional inquiries or to agency inquiries, such as ones from the State Department Inspector General, then there may have been violations of 18 U.S.C. paragraphs 1505 and 1519, end of quote. Later in my letter, I specifically asked whether the Justice Department limited the FBI's investigation in any way. Then Director Comey eventually responded months later. He claimed the FBI did investigate whether the unlawful destruction of federal records occurred. But an FBI agent said under penalty of perjury that the FBI investigation did not include destructions of federal records. So which is it? Who's telling the truth? The FBI agent that signed the affidavit, or is Mr. Comey right? Did the FBI really examine whether Secretary Clinton or her associates used the server to avoid federal record retention requirements? Or did Mr. Comey simply pay lip service to that concern and focus only on classification issues? Understanding what really happened is incredibly important. And let me tell you why. During the course of the FBI's investigation, it recovered thousands of work-related emails that were not turned over to the State Department by Secretary Clinton. The FBI also recovered work-related emails that Secretary Clinton and her associates apparently deleted. All of this is clear evidence of alienation of federal records. Indeed, even the FBI, now public investigative files, show that the FBI had knowledge that federal records were deleted. The FBI's interview summary of Secretary Clinton said that she was asked about a PRN work ticket, which referenced a conference call about PRN, Kendall and Mills, on March 31, 2015. I should have said, I'm going to say quote again and repeat that. She was asked about, quote, a PRN work ticket, which referenced a conference call between PRN, Kendall, and Mills on March 31st, 2015, end of quote. PRN stands for Platte River Network, the company that administered Secretary Clinton's non-government service. Kendall is David Kendall, her lawyer, and Mills is Cheryl Mills, her former chief of staff at the State Department. Paul Cornbatta, the administrator of her service, was also on a conference call and was interviewed multiple times by the FBI. He admitted that he lied to the FBI in his initial interviews and got immunity from the FBI in exchange for agreeing to tell them the truth. According to the summary of that interview, Mr. Cornbatta deleted Secretary Clinton's email archives on March 31st, 2015. So you have a conference call with Secretary Clinton's attorneys on March 31st, 2015, and on that very same day, her emails are deleted by someone who was at the conference, on that conference call, using special bleach bit software. The emails were State Department records under subpoena by Congress. What did the FBI do to investigate this apparent obstruction? According to affidavits filed in federal court, absolutely nothing. The FBI focused only on the handling of classified information. Maybe now we know why. Recently released FBI records show that by May 2nd, 2016, Mr. Comey sent around a draft of his statement exonerating Secretary Clinton. The FBI interview with Mr. Cambetta hadn't even happened yet. The exoneration statement was already in progress before the key witness had coughed up the truth about deleting federal records under subpoena by Congress. Did the FBI look at obstruction in the Clinton case? Mr. Comey said the FBI looked very hard at obstruction, but that is hard to believe. Director Comey began drafting an exoneration statement in April, early May of 2016. That's months before he publicly announced that he would not recommend charges on July the 5th, 2016. According to testimony of senior FBI officials, Comey began drafting his statement early because the FBI knew where the investigation was headed. That's according to testimony of senior FBI officials. But at that point, the FBI had not yet interviewed 17 witnesses. So that ought to be understood. They hadn't yet interviewed 17 witnesses. And one of those witnesses, can you believe it, was Secretary Clinton. Others included her closest aides and associates. How can you possibly then know where an investigation is headed without interviewing the main witnesses and the subject of the investigation? Maybe none of this raises any concerns for Democrats, but it should. The American people deserve to have the whole story. Congress and the public have a right to understand whether the fix was in from the very beginning. If so, then it must take steps to make sure it never happens again.
That was Senator Grassley speaking on the floor of the Senate. This scandal is beginning to ignite the higher-ups in Congress, and people like Grassley are beginning to take a very, very concentrated interest in this. This next clip is Sean Hannity and Sarah Carter and those others, Tom Fenton and others, describing these ongoing scandals in Washington. So listen very carefully, but Hannity is he's doing the heavy lifting, but he's doing a fine job.
We have major breaking news. Fox News has now obtained the draft of James Comey's exoneration statement about the Clinton server investigation. Remember, before the investigation was even completed, we now know that the legal term grossly negligent was changed to extreme carelessness in two specific places. Also, the word likely was removed from a section where Comey talked about foreign actors actually gaining access to top secret special access program information on her server, plus explosive new information about how the Obama State Department actually gave Hillary Clinton and her top aide, Uma Abedin, special treatment. Now, Judicial Watch has obtained documents that show Clinton and Abedin were allowed to actually physically remove electronic records from the State Department that they claimed were, quote, unclassified and personal. Also, Sarah Carter is here tonight with a new bombshell report about the FBI using an NSA surveillance program to spy on the American people. Also, we have new details on how the anti-Trump, pro-Clinton text messages from the FBI agent Peter Strzok and his FBI lawyer girlfriend Lisa Page were discovered. And according to a brand new poll, a majority of you, the American people, believe that Special Counsel Robert Mueller's tainted and corrupt investigation is biased. We've been telling you the rest of the media needs to catch up. That's happening right in this breaking news opening monologue. All right, a major development in the Clinton server scandal. You've got to pay close attention tonight. This is going to be a blockbuster hour. We here at Fox News have obtained the draft of James Comey's exoneration statement that let Hillary Clinton off the hook as it relates to the email server. The document shows that the term grossly negligent was in fact changed to extreme carelessness in two places. Remember, grossly negligent is the legal standard, which would have meant that Clinton broke the law. And here's the other piece of new information. In the part where Comey was talking about foreign actors accessing Clinton's server, the word likely accessed was removed. This is national security. All of this continues to prove that the fix was in from the very beginning of what is a farce of an investigation. There was the exoneration before the investigation was anywhere near concluded. And here's why. The draft statement is from May 2nd, 2016. Hillary and others, in her case, wasn't interviewed by the FBI until the 4th of July weekend. So how could Comey, how could this Hillary-loving, Trump-hating FBI agent Peter Strzok reach any conclusion about Clinton's server investigation 2 months before they even interviewed her or other key people? The fix was in, plain and simple. We now have the evidence. And Fox News legal analyst Greg Jarrett says what we just laid out could mean James Comey is guilty of obstruction of justice. That is a crime. That is a felony. We'll hear from him coming up later in the program. Also tonight, Judicial Watch has uncovered an absolutely bombshell report about the special treatment that Hillary Clinton and her top aide, Uma Abedin, were given by the Obama State Department. We now have documents that were obtained through the Freedom of Information Act. It shows that Clinton and her top aide, they were given permission by the State Department to remove both electronic and physical records that they claimed were, quote, personal and, quote, unclassified and non-recorded materials. According to Judicial Watch, this includes records of Hillary Clinton's calls, her schedules, which conveniently will not be made available to you, the American people. Also, in addition to all this, the document shows that Uma Abedin was allowed to take 5 boxes of physical files from the State Department, some of which were described as, quote, Muslim engagement documents. This is beyond outrageous, And it shows that there's a different set of rules and standards for the Clintons and their allies, a two-tiered justice system we have been talking about and warning you about. Make no mistake, this shouldn't be surprising, because it is all part of a pattern when it comes to the Clintons. The fix is in all the time. Fix is in against Bernie. The fix is in here. The fix is in on other issues. Removing, destroying documents, that's now just part of Clinton's standard operating procedures. Now remember, Clinton on her own, 33,000 subpoenaed emails from her personal server. Remember, she deleted them, she acid washed them, she used bleach bit, and guess what? Her aides were smashing mobile devices with hammers, and by the way, they gave the other mobile device to the FBI. It didn't have a SIM card. It was useless. Why? Because Clinton claims they were personal between her and her husband, who doesn't email, and it was about a wedding, a funeral, and yoga, and grandkids. Bill Clinton doesn't use email. Here's another wrinkle to this scandal. It's disturbing. It needs to be investigated. According to documents that Judicial Watch received, Clinton's calls, her schedules, were blocked from being made public and were allowed to be removed. Well, that's interesting when you consider this article from the AP in August of 2016. The headline, "Many donors to Clinton Foundation met with her at state." And the article goes on to detail, quote, at least 85 of 154 people from private interests who met or had phone conversations scheduled with Clinton while she led the State Department, they all donated to her family charity or pledged commitments to its international programs. Now, and according to a review of State Department calendars released so far to the AP, combined the 85 donors contributed as much as $156 million. And at least 40 donated more than $100,000 each, and 20 gave more than $1 million. So is that why Clinton and Aberdeen wanted to remove records of Hillary's calls and schedules? This would have come out in the campaign, and people would have been asking good questions. Now, Judicial Watch President Tom Fenton, he will be here in just a few minutes. Also tonight, breaking, investigative reporter Sarah Carter is out with damning new details on this controversial NSA surveillance program that may have been used to collect information on Americans without a warrant. Do these people not hear of a U.S. Constitution against unreasonable search and seizure? That would be number four. Sarah Carter reporting that numerous former intelligence law enforcement officials are now blowing the whistle on this potentially dangerous conduct in the way your government is conducting surveillance. And this is getting scary. According to the report, well, the officials, they were concerned over a practice that is known as reverse targeting, which, quote, occurs when intelligence and law enforcement officials use a foreign person as a legal pretense for their intended target, an American citizen. In other words, without a warrant. In other words, illegal. In other words, no Constitution, no Fourth Amendment. Now, Sarah Carter will also join us in a moment to explain how this practice may have been used as a political weapon. How often have you heard me talk about weaponizing our intelligence community, weaponizing the system of justice we have in this country, dual system of justice? Now, also tonight, we have breaking information about how the anti-Trump, pro-Clinton text messages from that FBI agent, Peter Strzok, and his FBI lawyer girlfriend, Lisa Page, were discovered. DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz is now revealing that his office requested those text messages from government-issued cell phones of several FBI employees that handled the Clinton email case. In this particular case, there were more than 10,000 of them, text messages between Strzok and his girlfriend, Page. Well, as of now, 375, that's it. Fox News was able to obtain just those show a severe anti-Trump, pro-Hillary Clinton bias. Now, these text messages include calling Trump a loathsome human being, an idiot. Strzok and Page also disparaging and mocking Trump supporters. And that's just the start of it. Now, here's what is raising all kinds of red flags, and it should. In August of 2016, Strzok texted, I want to believe the path you threw out for consideration in Andy's office, that there's no way he gets elected, but I'm afraid we can't take that risk. It's like an insurance policy in the unlikely event you die before you're 40. Fox News believes, we haven't confirmed yet, that Andy in that message is Andrew McCabe. That would be the deputy FBI director. That's the same guy whose wife, Jill, got $700,000 in donations from Democrats, including Terry McAuliffe, up to his eyeballs in this, during a 2015 Virginia State Senate run. That's an obscene amount of money for that race. We also have this exchange. Now, we edited out the middle of it, which contained a web link, and Paige says, and maybe you're meant to stay where you are because you're meant to protect the country from that menace. Wow, isn't that great to take that all upon themselves? Strzok replies, thanks. It's absolutely true that we're both very fortunate. And, of course, I will try and approach it that way. I just know it will be tough at times. I can protect our country at many levels. Not sure if that helps. Now, why would Strzok, why would his girlfriend Paige, and who we now think is Andrew McCabe, need an insurance policy against Donald Trump if he's on his way to win the election? What exactly did that mean? Now, Judicial Watch just announced that it has filed a lawsuit to gain access to all the FBI records about the removal of Strzok from the Mueller investigation. Here's what the deal is. You, the American people, you deserve answers. There's a lot at stake here. This all reeks of this deep state we've been telling you about and their effort to undermine a candidate that then became president. And the Wall Street Journal is reporting that this apparent meeting between Strzok, Page, and McCabe happened during the same time the FBI started its counterintelligence investigation into, quote, possible Trump-Russia ties. And as we've been telling you, this FBI agent, Peter Strzok, is tied to everything. And his FBI lawyer girlfriend also served on Robert Mueller's team. Here's what we know about Strzok. Before being demoted from Mueller's investigation, he was a top counterintelligence official. He was the guy that actually signed the document that kicked off the Russian investigation. Strzok's team also oversaw the handling of the anti-Trump dossier, the Russian propaganda, when it was given to the FBI. He was in charge of the interview of former National Security Advisor Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. And this is where it gets really interesting. Given Strzok's anti-Trump, pro-Hillary text messages, he also played a pivotal role in this Clinton email exoneration, so-called investigation. Now, this includes sitting in on Hillary's FBI interview. Remember, that was in July. In May, they already were writing the exoneration. He was also in the room for the interviews with key Clinton aides, Uma Abedin, Cheryl Mills. And this is the most damning piece of information when it comes to Strzok. He's the guy. He's the one that actually changed the legal standard language in James Comey's exoneration statement about Hillary Clinton from grossly negligent to extreme carelessness. Well, that allowed Hillary Clinton a get-out-of-jail-free card. That allowed the fix to be in from the get-go, even though we know she broke the law. What in God's name is Robert Mueller thinking? To have ever put together this abusively biased, this corrupt FBI agent and so many other people that have agendas on his so-called investigative team. Mueller claims to have, impeccable integrity, a sterling reputation. Why would anybody allow that to happen? And then again, that all seems to make sense when you consider all the Democratic donors that Mueller has handpicked to be part of the investigation. Now, these investigators have given over $50,000 in cash to Democrats, including Barack Obama and, you guessed it, Hillary Clinton. Just one donated to a Republican, and none of them gave any money to the Trump campaign. This entire investigation is corrupt to its core. It has now become a witch hunt, and it's now the time where Jeff Sessions needs to do his job. It's time for you, the American people, to understand this. According to a new poll, 54% say Robert Mueller has a conflict of interest because of his friendship. He's BFF with James Comey. And as we've been telling you, these two are best friends. And as Fox News legal analyst Greg Jarrett has pointed out on many an occasion, their relationship could also actually be a violation of the law. Calling Attorney General Sessions, where are you? Step up and do your job.
Boy, that is igniting the public at large in looking into these scandals now. Where are you, Jeff Sessions? I think he has so many different things going on. He can only move in a very calculated manner. And I think he's working on this. So I can't be critical of Jeff Sessions at all. Now, next is Sarah Carter with a report about the FBI using NSA surveillance techniques and programs to come in the back door on some of their own investigations. This is very, very disturbing. Here we go with Sarah Carter.
It's fried at this point. I don't know what's going on over there, but if we believe in our Constitution, we believe in equal justice under the law, they've got to step up here. And I don't know what it's going to take. Sarah Carter, let me go to you. This is blockbuster. If we're talking about the Fourth Amendment, illegal search and seizure, you have talked to long-serving NSA legal officials and others, law enforcement, about the FBI's use of this NSA surveillance program, and that, in fact, it's being misused. Specifically, explain.
Specifically what they do is they have the NSA has a surveillance program that's meant to capture everything on foreigners. But what they've done is they used it as a backdoor. The FBI uses that as a backdoor to do warrantless searches on Americans. And this is a huge problem. I mean, they've admitted to it. We know that Comey testified about this just before he was fired, and he adamantly stated that we never did anything illegal. But the problem is when the FIS courts, when the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Courts took a look at this, they said, wait a minute, no, you mishandled this program, and you were actually using it as a backdoor without a warrant, and 1 out of 20 searches, upstream data searches, were done inappropriately, and they even said they think it was far greater than that. And the only reason why these intelligence officials and law enforcement officials, Sean, came forward is because they were so concerned after what happened with President Trump and his team, particularly the unmasking and the revelations that people in Obama's administration had requested all of this information. They thought it was important that this be exposed.
You know, as you listen to this, all of this as a lawyer, and, you know, it's sort of like we have been on this program with the help of you, John Solomon, Sarah Carter, mm-hmm. Tom Fitton. There's a small group of us unpeeling layer, layer, layer of this onion, and I see a big house of cards that is about to come collapsing in. Because now we're getting to the raw part of this, which is there is a deep state. Laws are being broken. The things we've been saying about weaponizing the intelligence community and corrupt people at the highest levels.
Including a top Department of Justice official who was removed for concealing his meetings with Fusion GPS, the dossier.
Bruce Orr and his wife who worked for... who did the op research against Trump for Fusion GPS.
If the FBI and the Department of Justice used a phony dossier in their affidavit in support of a warrant to spy on Trump associates, wiretapping them, that's a fraud on the court. That's a crime. You can't use dubious information in support of a federal court order.
You watched as I did the hearings yesterday. We saw a very passionate Trey Gowdy, a very passionate Jim Jordan, and I'm sitting there, and it's everything we have all been unfolding. And I said to my audience, this should have sounded familiar, because this is what we've been covering. How close do you think we are to now getting to the truth, and who's in trouble tonight?
Well, I think Congress is going to demand the truth and begin holding people in contempt of Congress if they continue to defy
subpoenas. Hillary Clinton, should she be worried tonight?
Oh, Clinton should be very, very worried tonight.
Should Uma Abedin be worried?
Yes.
Cheryl Mills?
Yes.
James Comey?
Yes.
Robert Mueller?
Robert Mueller, you know, it's hard to say because he does have a distinguished record. However, the people he put on this special counsel team.
Is it not clear that by now he has an agenda?
Clear bias.
Rosenstein, is he in trouble?
Oh, yes. He's conflicted out of this case. He refuses to
Andrew
do
McCabe?
So. He's in big trouble.
Sarah, you know all the players. You know all the information. You're covering all of these on many fronts. We haven't even mentioned Uranium One in any detail, but that's about to blow up in a big way. Who's in
that's
trouble
right.
tonight? Who should be worried tonight based on what we now know?
Well, what we now know, I think Deputy Director Andrew McCabe is going to be in big trouble. I know that Congress is looking at him now. They probably are going to try to get his text messages or subpoena documents that he, you know, what he's been involved in from the FBI. I think
How about Comey? Let's go through the list. Comey.
I think Comey's in trouble. I think looking at this, they're definitely going to question him and ask
Rod
him, why
Rosenstein?
Did you change this? Yes, I believe
Hillary
so,
Clinton?
Too. Oh, yeah, I think she's been worried about this for a long time.
Cheryl Mills?
Absolutely.
Uma?
Absolutely.
Anyone else you can think of?
Peter Strzok, Lisa Page. I mean, I think they're already in trouble.
Yeah. Tom, you agree with all that?
Yeah, I think there's a likelihood the Clinton investigations get reopened. The Mueller investigation is derailed as a result of his the compromises caused by having this FBI special agent involved. The number two deputy being a Hillary Clinton activist going to her election night party, sending an email to Sally Yates praising her anti-Trump actions as an Obama holdover acting attorney general. Look, you know, just so you know, Sean, we looked into the prosecutors that Mueller hired. We couldn't find anyone who was a registered Republican.
Exit question.
We did find 10 registered Democrats, no registered Republicans on Mueller's team.
Okay. Exit question, yes or no question. Bigger than Watergate?
In so many different ways, it is.
Sarah?
It's more pervasive.
Sarah?
Yes, I think so. And I agree with Greg.
Spying by the FBI, Justice Department, intelligence agencies on the political opponents of the administration of Barack Obama
yes or
and Hillary
no.
Clinton. Bigger than Watergate by far.
I say Watergate on steroids, human growth hormone, overdoses. Thank you both. This is serious.
At the end of Sarah Carter's report, then Sean Hannity went back and asked them to express and individually name those people that are in the most trouble on all these scandals, you know. And so each person, Sarah Carter and others, Tom Fitton and others on the panel discussion there, were set out who they thought was in real big trouble. And so that was very, very interesting to see who they named and so forth. Now, coming up next, we'll be finishing with President Trump's speech to the FBI at Quantico and their training school down there. And Jeff Sessions introduces him. So listen carefully, and we're going to end this hour program with this speech. We might make some few comments right at the end if we have time. But thank you for listening tonight.
And now, to introduce the President, please join me in welcoming my friend, the Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions.
Thank you, Chris, and for that introduction and for inviting us to this fabulous academy. The American people appreciate what you do. The American people have always supported law enforcement, and this is a special occasion indeed for these graduates and your families. I have the honor to introduce someone who supports law enforcement officers just as he promised 100%. Donald Trump ran for office as a law and order candidate. I believe that is one of the biggest reasons he won. The American people spoke loud and clear. They want to restore the rule of law, and they want to be safe. Now he is governing as a law and order president. He is fulfilling his campaign promises, and he is delivering results for the American people. The day I was sworn in as attorney general, he sent us an order. Got to know he knows how to send a clear order. The order was reduce crime in America. Not preside over increasing crime in America, but to reduce it. We embrace that goal, as I know you do, and we are doing that with the indispensable help of our state and local law enforcement partnerships like those represented by these outstanding officers here today. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our nation's highest law enforcement official, the President of the United States.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you very much, everybody.
That's a lot of years since the last president. And we'll be back. And thank you to Attorney General Sessions. Thank you, Director Ray. Assistant Director Resch, for hosting me here at the FBI National Academy to address our wonderful local police and sheriffs from all over America. very special honor. And it's an honor to stand here today with the incredible men and women of law enforcement. Thank you. We're here to celebrate your graduation from the National Academy at Quantico. For over 80 years, this rigorous and world-renowned program has trained America's most dedicated local law enforcement officers from all across the country. So respected. Let me begin by saying to each member of the graduating class, congratulations. You left home for 11 weeks to enroll in this program because you love your jobs, you love your communities, and you love your country. Earlier this week, you completed the harrowing 6-mile yellow brick road. Just signed that beautiful brick. I just signed that brick. Designed for the Marines to push even the toughest to their limit. You endured muddy waters, barbed wire fences, icy creeks, steep hills, and so much more, knowing that your elite training will help save lives. The training you received at Quantico will give you that extra edge you need to defuse a threat, to disarm a criminal, and to deliver a child safely to her mother's arms. I am here not only to congratulate you, but to honor you for your courage and for your devotion. And I want you to know that with me as your president, America's police will have a true friend and loyal champion in the White House, more loyal than anyone else can be. I tell you. I also want to take a moment to speak to all of the law enforcement families here today. You make tremendous sacrifices. American families can sleep soundly at night because of the burden that you carry for all of us. So on behalf of all Americans, to every law enforcement family here today and all across the nation, thank you, thank you, thank you very much. And you do that under the most difficult conditions. You very rarely get the recognition you deserve, I can tell you that. But your families know what you deserve. And ultimately, that's the most important thing, isn't it? It's not a news story when our officers save a life, rescue a family, or stop a crime. It's just another day on the job. Yet no matter the circumstances, you serve tirelessly, selflessly, and heroically. You do it because you really believe in doing your duty and doing it properly. Being a police officer is not just a career, it's a calling, and I've seen it. I have so many friends that are police officers, so many people in the FBI. These are great, great people. These are really heroes for all of us. So thank you very much. And as we as a country must do a better job showing our police officers the respect and gratitude that you have earned, and we will do that. So when you return home to your local precincts, I want you to deliver a message to your fellow officers. The President of the United States has your back 100%. I will fight for you, and I will never, ever let you down, ever. Now, more than ever, we must support the men and women in blue. In the last 2 years, America has seen a tragic rise in violent crime. In 2015 and 2016, we witnessed the steepest 2-year consecutive increase in murders in nearly half a century. and you look at what's going on in Chicago, what the hell is going on in Chicago? What the hell is happening there? For the second year in a row, a person was shot in Chicago every 3 hours. You don't think these people in this room can stop that? They'd stop that. They'd stop it. And just north of our nation's capital in Baltimore, on average, someone was murdered nearly every day of this year. Police departments are overstretched. They're underfunded. And they're totally underappreciated. Except by me. Instead of holding up our police as the role models and mentors they have been subjected to malicious attacks on their character and their integrity. This anti-police sentiment is wrong, and it's dangerous, and we will not stand for it. Most concerning of all, we have seen an alarming increase in violent assaults carried out against our police officers. Last year, an officer was assaulted in America on average every 10 minutes. In 2016, more than 140 officers lost their lives serving in the line of duty. These deaths fill our hearts with pain and with grief. Every drop of blood spilled from our men and women in blue is a wound inflicted on our nation. And when a brother or sister in uniform is hurt, on that day, all of America bleeds blue. I want to send a message today to those who threaten violence against our police. We will protect those who protect us. And we believe criminals who kill police officers should get the death penalty. One of my first executive orders as president instructed the Department of Justice to take all necessary steps and legal action to protect law enforcement from acts of violence against them. The Department of Justice has also announced more than $98 million in grant funding to help your local police departments hire desperately needed new officers. Also, just as I promised, we are allowing our local police to access surplus military equipment, something the previous administration for some reason refused to do. Explain that one. Explain it to me, please. Never understood that one. Somebody out there can explain. Anybody want to stand up and explain it? That'd be tough. We want to bring down violent crime. Then we must stand up for our police. All of us gathered here today share a common goal. We want every child to be able to walk safely home from school, and we want every mother and father to know that their children will be secure when they tuck them in at night. No family should have to worry about bullets flying through windows or gangs recruiting on street corners. Every American child should be able to grow up in a safe community, surrounded by a loving family, and preparing to embark on a bright, beautiful future. As president, my greatest duty is to protect our nation and to protect our people. As we have witnessed recently, America faces grave threats. Terrorists have struck in the streets and subways of New York City twice in a few months. Both terrorists came to our country through the dysfunctional immigration system that we are correcting, and rapidly. And one came through chain migration. The other, visa lottery. They have a lottery. You pick people. Do you think the country's given us their best people? No. What kind of a system is that? They come in by a lottery. They give us their worst people. They put them in a bin. But in his hand, when he's picking them, is really the worst of the worst. Congratulations. You're going to the United States. Okay. What a system. Lottery system. We're calling for Congress to end chain migration and to end the visa lottery system and replace it with a merit-based system of immigration. We want a system that puts the needs of American families, taxpayers, and security first. That is why I have also directed the federal government, law enforcement, to work closely with our state and local police to destroy criminal cartels like the savages of MS-13. Already this year, the Department of Justice has worked with partners in Central America to arrest and charge roughly 4,000 MS-13 members. And the Department of Homeland Security has arrested nearly 800 MS-13 gang members and associates, an 83% increase from the previous year, and we're much higher this year than we were last year, and we'll get rid of them completely very soon, right? Right? They're working hard. Earlier this year, ICE officers conducted the largest crackdown on criminal gangs in the history of our country. In just 6 weeks, ICE, these are great people too, great people, and the Border Patrol agents, great people, and our law enforcement partners arrested nearly 1,400 suspects and seized more than 200 illegal firearms and nearly 600 rounds of narcotics and over 600 pounds. It's a lot of stuff. Recently, prosecutions of criminal firearm possessions were up 23%. To any member of MS-13 listening, I have a message for you. We will find you. We will arrest you. We will jail you. We will throw you the hell out of the country. And somehow I like it better than jail. Jail, we have to take care of them. Who the hell wants to take care of them? You know, the jail stuff is wonderful, but we have to pay for it, right? But these are killers. These are people that are sadists in many cases. We don't want them. We don't want them. They're getting out of here. Our cities should not be sanctuaries for criminals. They should be sanctuaries for Americans. It is our duty to serve the hardworking citizens of our country who raise our families, cherish our values, salute our flag, and make this land our home. These are the citizens you represent, and these are the citizens you courageously protect. By the way, you are great people. You are incredible people. Just so you understand, you are great people doing an incredible job. And I hope your families know that. I'd say 90% of them, probably 90% agree, right? The other 10%, that's not working out so well. We heard from one such hero among us earlier today, your class spokesperson, DEA officer Craig Wiles. It is truly amazing to see Craig's father sitting in the very seat where Craig himself sat 40 years ago when he was just 15 years old. Where is his father, by the way? Where is his father? Where's your father? There he is. He's better looking than you, by the way. It's a great story, though. It's fantastic. Thank you for being here. That's really nice. You're proud of your son, right? Good. So am I. That day, Craig watched his father speak at this podium. When he listened to his father's words, he was filled with pride and such devotion that at that moment he too decided to become a law enforcement officer. Terrific. Today it's incredible that his own children have joined us for this special moment. His daughter Ashley is carrying on the legacy of her father and grandfather. She now serves in law enforcement at the FBI. His son Austin is in college, and no matter what he chooses to do, I think we can confidently, and we really can with great confidence, say that this, he will always be better because of his father's lifelong example of selflessness and courage and of love. So thank you, Craig, and your family. It's a terrific story and really is a great honor to be with you. Thank you very much. But as I look out in the audience today, I see many young, bright faces. To them and to many other young Americans watching at home, of which there are many. You see, there's the fake news back there. Look, everybody. Fake news. No, actually, some of them are fine people. About, let's see, who's back there? Yeah, about 30%. You are the men and women who teach them what it means to be a police officer. You are always there for us, the men and women in blue, in the dark of night, in the rush of danger. You break down doors, race down alleys, chase down suspects, and bring down criminals. And you do it with strength and skill and pride. There's a reason that your children look up to you with their eyes full of awe and full of wonder. There's a reason that they rush to the window just to catch a glimpse of your sirens flashing by. Because to them, and to all of us, and to me, you are the guardians who keep us safe, who ward off danger, and who confront evil so that the good will always prevail. You represent the best of America, and you leave us with a debt we can never hope to repay. Today we honor you, we thank you, and we know that by your example, some of the children here today and watching at home will be inspired to fill your shoes, to continue your service, to follow in your footsteps, and to take the oath, to carry the badge, to wear the shield, and to join the ranks of heroes. Thank you to our police. Thank you to our sheriffs. Thank you to the FBI. And thank you to our law enforcement families. God bless you all. Thank you very much.